Good evening. My name is Mike, and I work with Congressman Childers. I'd like to welcome you all to the Congressman's telephone town hall meeting. For those of you who are wondering if you're connected, you are. Right now, you're in what we call listen-only mode, which means that you can hear me, but I can't hear you just yet. In just a moment, I'll introduce the Congressman, who will give you an update on issues before Congress, and then he'll open it up to questions. But first, let me handle just a few housekeeping items. If you'd like to ask a question, it's very easy. At any time, you can press star 3 on your touchtone phone, and you'll be put in line to speak with one of our staff members. They'll pop on the line and take down your name and where you're calling from, and then we'll try to get to your question just as quickly as possible. So the next time you hear your name after you press star 3 will either be by me or the congressman when you be live. The entire conference will hear you so you can ask your question directly. If it all sounds a little confusing, trust me, it's very simple. If you have a question, you can ask our staff. They'll be taking down your name. Remember, star 3. We'll be visiting for about an hour tonight, so there should be time to take lots of questions. Feel free now to go ahead and press star 3 if you'd like to get in line. Now I'd like to turn this conversation over to Congressman Travis Childers. Congressman?
Thank you for joining me this evening for this important discussion. I look forward to speaking with as many of you as possible, and we don't want to move too fast, but we want to move fast enough that we can get a good many questions in. I've chosen this format because I just feel it's the fastest way to reach the most of my constituents. I understand that many of you have serious concerns about health care reform, and this forum hopefully will allow me to explain my position to an unlimited number of North Mississippians from every corner of the district. Today, insurance premiums are increasing 7 times faster than wages, and many Americans are suffering from job loss that leaves them without health insurance, or they're unable to afford new coverage. Most of us agree that our health care system needs some type of reform to lower cost for working families. It's how we go about reforming this system that is central to the current health care debate. My top priority has been and is lowering cost for hardworking families of North Mississippi. And the best way to do this is through competition. I hope that the House of Representatives will ultimately be able to craft a bill that focuses on reducing cost and increasing competition while it still would allow people to keep their current plan and their current doctor that they're happy with. I also hope that this legislation does so in a bipartisan, fiscally responsible manner. During today's tough economic times, we have to balance the need to reform our health care system with the need to practice fiscal discipline. That being said, H.R. 3200, the health care bill that is in the House at this point, is not a bill that I can support. If Congress were to vote on it tomorrow, if we were in session, I would not be able to vote for it. All that being said, I do want to say to the constituents of North Mississippi, I want to be a part of meaningful and true health care reform that was not crafted in a fast manner, but reform that is crafted in a manner that is truly beneficial to Mississippians. It's a complicated issue, and it's one that's far too important to do it in a hurry. I've said this before, but I want to say again, it is far more important to me that we get health care reform right than get it fast. And in the grand scheme of things, whether we were to have passed that bill in July, which it did not come for a vote, or we vote on it in September, December, or even next year, this is far too important to rush. And whatever, if a health care reform bill is passed, and whatever is passed, will take a significant amount of time to fully implement. and it will have major ramifications for years, even decades to come. And while H.R. 3200 has now been passed out of the Ways and Means Committee, Education and Labor Committee, and then lastly out of the Energy and Commerce Committee just before we left, we still have a lot of steps to go before a health care bill would ever get to the president's desk. As a matter of fact, there are other versions that are still being crafted, and I'm watching specifically in the House as well as the Senate. I will work hard to make sure and that I monitor these bills in both of the houses. I think, again, that it's too important, and we need a bill that not only would pass, we need a bill that will work, and that's what's even more important. With having said that, I think maybe now if we could just start some questions, and if you would keep your question somewhat, you know, to the point, and I will try to be pointed with my answers and not going too long, because the less time we spend per question, the more questions we can get. And again, thank you so much.
Thank you, Congressman. We have, I think the count shows 3,200 people on the call right now. A lot of folks have great interest in this thing. The first person is Nellis Berg from Albany. Nellis, you're on the line. Could you ask a question?
Yes, I'm on the line.
Go ahead,
yes, sir.
The things specifically that can be done, that must be done, do not involve insurance to reduce cost. And everybody's so concerned about how we're going to fund insurance. Insurance is not the problem. The government created the problem when they created licensing, and then they aggravated the problem in World War II, and unless we attack the source of the problem, we'll never bring it under control. Wages and prices were frozen, but you could provide health care, and it didn't count as an increase in wage. Now, if we do that, as we have, we created a system that didn't cost much, and nobody cared how much it cost. The insurance companies didn't care, the doctors didn't care, the medical care didn't care, the business didn't care because it didn't cost much, and the person that was insured for the health care didn't care because it wasn't costing him. Nobody cared how much it cost, and we had a monopolistic situation created by government, and we have gone, and if we're going to change it, we got to change it there. We can't change it by changing the form of the insurance, and that's, I'd like to see what we're planning to do to attack the basic problem that was created by government.
Yes, sir. Mr. Byrd, can I jump in there? Thank you, Mr. Byrd. And let me say this. I agree with a great part of what you said. As a matter of fact, the nonpartisan Congressional Budget Office, and sometimes on TV or you may read in the newspaper, and they're called CBO, the CBO, Congressional Budget Office, has identified over 100 ways that we can save money and or cut cost in health care. And these are real issues and real opportunities to cut cost. One of the reasons, I guess, that I am not or I'm less impressed with this bill, I just feel like that not enough people are looking at cutting cost. That has to be central and first to providing true health care reform. If we cut cost, it allows us to help some of those who right now can't afford insurance premiums so high they've been fired from their job or laid off or lost their health insurance for some reason. Again, also, we've got to increase competition, and one thing we've got to do, we've got to stop penalizing people for having pre-existing conditions. We're never truly going to get health care reform until we get a few of those things out of the way. One of my colleagues in Congress suggested perhaps we take health care reform in phases or stages. And number one, start with taking the CBO's recommendation of looking at this more than 100 ways to cut costs. I'd like to see us do that. Again, I think this bill was moving too fast. There were others who agreed with me that we needed to slow down. I can't say this enough. It is far more important that we get this right if we're serious about reforming health care than getting it fast. So, Mr. Byrd, thank you for your comments. Next question. Next question. Yes, sir. Next question.
Yes. Looks like we've got an inbound caller asking about a bipartisan plan by Senator Grassley and Senator Baucus. We don't have the person's name, but Congressman, I'm putting him on. You're on the line, caller. Hello, please ask your question.
Yes, Congressman Childers, this is Don Cross from Tupelo, and I'm gratified to hear that you are concerned about House Bill 3200. It is scary to say the least. My question was whether or not you would support a bipartisan effort such as the one being proposed by Senator Baucus, Senator Grassley, that would be a much more equitable, or it appears to be a much more equitable approach to health care reform and funding.
Thank you very much, Congressman.
Mr. Cross, thank you. Thank you for your question. And I hope that you were online just a few minutes ago and you heard me say that I am monitoring every health care reform bill that is out there right now. And quite frankly, that includes any bill that potentially would come out of the Senate. Even though I serve you in the House of Representatives, if the Senate offers a better bill, I am not opposed to that. I have looked at that bill, and quite frankly, now they're still working on that bill. It is probably closer to something that I could support than H.R. 3200. I will say this on behalf of H.R. 3200, the Conservative Blue Dog Coalition that I am a member of worked really hard that last week that we were in Congress, the last week in July that ended July 31st, to try to improve that bill. And I think they did improve it, but the problem for me is it just did not improve it enough to get my support. So to specifically answer your question, that bill, the Grassley bill, and quite frankly, thank you, it is bipartisan. That is what I want to support, something that is bipartisan. I have often said I believe if one party owns this health care reform bill, it will not be successful. That is a bill that I would look very seriously at. So thank you, Mr. Cross, for your call, and thanks for staying online.
Thank you, Congressman. I was just going to inform our viewers, our listeners, that there are actually 5,210 people on the line right now. We have 34 people in the queue waiting to ask questions. Our screeners are doing the best they can. Please don't give up. There are 55 more people waiting. So it's obviously a very, very important issue to a lot of people in North Mississippi. We have Linda from Tupelo, who has a question about Medicare and the health reform bill. Linda, would you ask your question, please?
I have a question. Will this bill affect people on Medicare at present time?
I assume you mean this bill. You're saying that H.R. 3200.
Correct.
What was his name,
will
Linda?
It affect?
Linda, thank you. Yes, thank you, Linda. Good question, because there are a lot of myths out there. And, again, I'm not trying to defend H.R. 3200. At this point, it's not a bill that I can support, as I said earlier. However, nothing in H.R. 3200 would actually cut seniors' coverage or make the negative changes to the Medicare benefits. But having said that, I want to mention this. There's areas that we could save money in the Medicare system. There are areas that we could eliminate just really waste and, quite frankly, abuse in that system. We need to look at that. Those of you, I hope I have a good many on the line that are recipients of Medicare, and specifically Medicare Part D, we need to fill the donut hole. That's a problem. And those of you, if you're not familiar with it, it probably sounds somewhat funny, but if you're on Medicare, receiving Medicare, you are familiar with the donut hole. One other thing that this bill did do, quite frankly, would eliminate the copays for preventive services. We have finally started recognizing wellness programs, healthy lifestyles, and so forth. We need to keep moving in that direction. But if I could say just one other thing about Medicare while we're on that subject, and I don't know how many people are aware of this, but big cities, for instance, like Miami, Los Angeles, and New York, and many others, but those three specifically, they have among the highest reimbursement rates from Medicaid of anyone. And for the life of me, no one will ever convince me that people in Miami, their doctors should be reimbursed more than the people in North Mississippi. We have some of the finest doctors, hospitals, and medical treatment in this country right here. There's a terrible disparity among Medicare reimbursement. The Blue Dogs are extremely concerned about that. Also, the Rural Caucus, which I co-chair with one of my fellow Republicans from Nebraska, he and I have talked about this. We need to bring parity to Medicare reimbursement issues. But back to your original question, no, it would not. This bill would not affect Medicare coverage. So thank you very much, Linda. Next question, please.
Congressman, we have several hundred, actually a couple of 190 people in line to ask questions. Mr. Brown from Horn Lake had also asked about the Medicare donut hole. I think you addressed that one. Let's see, moving down the list, the next one, there's a gentleman from Houston, Mississippi. Mr. Wilson, you're live now. Mr. Wilson, please ask your question.
Yes, in the bill, the CAPS Amendment forbids federal funds to pay for abortion, but it allows health plans to pay for abortion on demand to be subsidized, the unit that do perform abortions, where approximately 80% or more of people do not want abortions to be funded by federal funds. What are your thoughts on this? Where do you stand on this?
Thank you, sir, and a very valid question and a good question. I've been very clear about this position, and I haven't moved on this. I will not support any legislation that includes any kind of funding for abortion, period. I am one of many Democrats and Republicans. We had a bipartisan letter that was sent to the House leadership that made our position very clear. There are a number on my side of the aisle, and there are a number on the other side of the aisle, and I agree with you. I don't know what the percentage is, whether it's 80%, sir, or less or more, but I can tell you I'm in that percentage that will not support federal funding for abortions, period.
Thank you, sir. Congressman, there's a person from Amory, New Albany, South Haven, Olive Branch, and Byhalia, all asking the same question about the death panel. They want to know if you could give us some explanation about the so-called death panel. There's about five people, so we figured we'd ask that question for all five of them. Congressman?
Well, and I've been asked that, quite frankly, as I've traveled around the district. First of all, I don't believe that the bill does that. I honestly think that specifically, that's been taken out of context. Tammy, my wife, Dustin, our son, and Lauren, our daughter, have spent the last 13 and a half years in the senior care business. We started a personal home personal care home or assisted living home, if you will. We started it from scratch with one patient in January 1996. We have shown and made our strong commitment to senior citizens. We didn't just talk about senior citizens. We've shown it. We've walked the walk in addition to talking the talk. I just really believe, though, that is a myth. It doesn't say that. And specifically, here's what it does say. And I will tell you, I will support this. The language simply allows Medicare to pay for a voluntary, not required, voluntary, confidential conversation, visit, if you will, between patients and their doctors if the patient chooses. Now, especially in nearing an end-of-life situation that is just reality, the decisions made affecting a person's end-of-life care, those are deeply personal decisions, and they require and should require very thoughtful consideration. Now, and some people don't realize this, but prior to now, and even now, physicians are not compensated for an office visit or a visit, if you will, a consultation period to sit down and explain to people, these are your treatment options, or this is what happens without treatment, et cetera. Again, this benefit is completely voluntary. Nobody has to do this. There's no mandate about having an advanced care directive or no mandate for a living will. And if I might just take just a few seconds right here to say, I lost my uncle, my last uncle on my father's side of the family a little over two years ago. We have the good fortune to have two doctors in our family. One cousin and one uncle. So when my Uncle Tony had lung cancer, he had treatment, he made it another 18 months and did pretty good, and then all of a sudden it came back, and when it came back with a vengeance. We had the luxury of my Uncle Bill being able to sit down with our family and saying, Tony, this is what your options are, A, B, C. No treatment, some treatment, much treatment. And while he wasn't trying to dictate or anything about telling Uncle Tony how long he thought he would live, he has spent his life doing this. And my family trusts him and my family respects him, and we respected my Uncle Bill's opinion. And my Uncle Tony took his advice, or at least took one of the options that he offered him. But I guess that my whole point to that is saying my Uncle Tony knew what his options were. I think it makes sense for Medicare or, quite frankly, insurance to pay a doctor to sit down with a patient, that patient's family, and explain what the options are. That was not the intent of the bill, and, quite frankly, it wasn't what the bill said. So, you know, I've been asked about that many times, and I appreciate you bringing that up. So next caller.
We're going to give the congressman a chance to get a drink of water and ask a polling question in a moment. We'll ask you when we provide this question, if you would just please use your telephone keypad to provide us an answer. The congressman would like each person on the phone to tell us how he or she gets their health insurance coverage right now. Press 1 if it's for your job. You get the health care coverage through your employer. Press 2 if it's Medicare. Press 3 if it's Medicaid. Press 4 if you pay from private insurance yourself. And press 5 if you have no insurance. Again, please tell us how you get your health care coverage right now. Press 1 if your employer provides it. Press 2 if it's by Medicare. Press 3 if Medicaid. Press 4 if you buy your own private insurance, and press 5 if you don't have insurance. Congressman, we'll add these numbers up right now. We've got over 943 people who are voting. So we'll announce those results in a moment. But now let's get back to the callers. He's had a drink of water, and we have an inbound caller who has a question about how we might drive costs down without a public option. Caller, we don't have your name, but you're on the line. Please ask the congressman your question.
Hi, Congressman. My name is Michael Wade. I'd like to thank you for holding this this meeting here. I'd like to state that I do support the government option, and that I do believe that we are in a state that it has to be done hurriedly. I've been hearing about this for 30 years, and I'm tired of the lobbyists, and I'm tired of the insurance companies setting the agenda. So my question to you is, if we don't have a government option, how else are we going to drive down the cost of the insurance that we now have to pay?
Mike, thank you for that. And as I said when I started this telethon hall meeting tonight, there are a lot of opinions, and it's a very complex matter. And I appreciate your stand. Specifically, you said your question was, without a public option, then how do we drive costs down? You may have been hearing about insurance exchanges, where insurance companies are forced to be competitive. Insurance companies have to stop penalizing people for pre-existing conditions. We will never have true health care reform without that. We also have to cut costs, Mike. We can't add more people without a means, add more people to health care coverage without a means to pay for it. I still say that if we work on cutting costs, saving money, and just trimming the fat out, if you will, of the money that we're spending now, we will save enough money to be able to offer coverage to many people. Now, I personally like the idea of, with a little pressure if necessary, but that we give the private sector or the insurance companies the opportunity to step up and do the right thing and do what they should do. And while I realize, Mike, it would be easy for you to say, and you may very well say, well, maybe they haven't done that yet. We haven't been talking about true health care reform until right now. I am a free enterprise guy. I'd like to see this given a chance before going to the option that you just mentioned. There's still a lot of money that could be saved. We can still trim the fat out of this. We can still offer health care to more people. Let me say one thing, and I'm not sure if this is an appropriate place to put it, Mike, but while I'm that close to this, I would like to mention this, and many people are beginning to be made aware of this. We have a tremendous shortage of primary care physicians in this country. If just magically we could offer health care to every American today, the truth is, and the facts are, that we do not have enough primary care physicians to treat them. Congress is not talking about that enough. I'm talking about it. I spent some time at University Medical Center recently in Jackson, which is an outstanding facility, and I asked them how many doctors we are graduating and putting into the world every year. 120 in the state of Mississippi. But we have 82 counties. Not all of those 120 are staying here. We've got a serious, serious problem with a shortage of physicians. And if we're ever going to address that, this is the time to address it. And according to the best statistics I can find, Mike, 20% of the people in Mississippi are uninsured or either do not have access to Medicaid or Medicare. Some of these people, when they have a catastrophic illness, are forced into bankruptcy. That just isn't right. Let me assure you, I am very interested in that 20% that doesn't have insurance and doesn't have any access. Thank you for your call. Next call, please.
Thank you, Congressman. We have the results of the survey. We had 1,709 people respond to the question. Congressman, 28% of the people on the line now get their health care coverage from their employer. Over half, 54% of the folks here get it from Medicare, 3% from Medicaid, another 11% get their health care from their own paid private insurance, and 3% of the people on the line don't have health care insurance. We had a call earlier from Mr. George Ray Knox and Amory. He had a question about the cost of health care reform and what we can do to help small and mid-sized businesses, Congressman, Mr. Knox and Amory.
Mr. Knox, again, one other concern that I had with H.R. 3200 is I wasn't sure that it was that bill was truly looking out for small businesses. My wife and I are involved in a small business. Those businesses where we're not allowed or are not able to offer health insurance, we want to offer health insurance. We want any employee, and I think most any small business, I think most any small business in the state, and certainly in our district, that have employees, would want their employees to have insurance. However, truly small businesses, and there were exemptions in H.R. 3200 in the final bill as a result of the Blue Dogs, quite frankly, lobbying, small businesses would have been exempt if they had a payroll that did not exceed $500,000 a year. The intent wasn't to try to free anyone from offering health insurance. It was just that those small businesses that truly are not able to would not have to close as a result of this. We have to do this in moderation, and we have to be careful that we do not close small businesses. In a tough economy like we're in today, small businesses are who are creating the jobs, and we can't stifle them. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Congressman. We have Ms. Ruth Stein. Ruth Stein, I apologize for not knowing the pronunciation, from Oxford. She has a question about the individual mandate. Ruth, you're on the line.
Yes, Congressman. During the presidential campaign, candidate Obama expressed opposition to the idea of an individual mandate, but now he seems apparently to be in favor of it. And of course, this is in all versions of H. 3200 bill. So I was wondering whether you support or oppose an individual mandate in any reform bill that might be proposed.
Let me say what I do support. I do support requiring personal accountability. I think that many people are not being accountable for some of their own health issues. Now, we can't control when we get sick, and we can't control some things about our health, but we can control parts of it. And part of it is in lifestyle. And in our state, we're the leading state in diabetes. Part of that is simply from our lifestyle. And thank goodness we have gotten more wise, if you will, through the years. We're recognizing the importance of exercise. We're recognizing the importance of healthy eating habits. But if a person chooses to, and let me just be real clear about this, I'm not being critical of anyone, but if a person chooses to be a heavy smoker and or heavy drinker and or diabetic and not trying to help themselves, we have to go back and hold, that person, they've got to take accountability and take responsibility for some of their own health. As to the individual mandate or the absolute mandate, that's a very complicated matter, and it would have too many ifs and whereas is attached to it. I want to see more details before I made a commitment to that. But thank you for calling.
Thank you, Congressman. We now have Ms. Tammy Collier from Tupelo who has a question. Tammy, you're on the line.
Hi, Congressman Childers. I would just like to know your opinion on the public option period. Do you think that there should be a government mandate for health care?
I think the government mandate, and again, I guess this is kind of like the last call on that, a government mandate has merit. I mean, in other words, if first of all, though, this bill that has the public option that I'm not ready to endorse, if you get to that point, then I think there has to be some sort of mandate, or, Tammy, we still wind up treating people in the emergency room and paying with these, you know, expensive bills that they can't afford to pay. We get back to individual responsibility. We have to put some responsibility on the person, and the person has to accept some degree of responsibility. As you know, Tammy, if you have insurance today, and you probably do, if you have insurance, you are paying, you're helping to pay, just like I am and every one of us who have insurance, we're paying for the uninsured indirectly who wait and use the emergency room as a doctor's office. And we don't have that luxury anymore. You know, when I was talking about cutting costs and saving money earlier, we are living in lean times, and we're living in times where we just do not have the luxury of using the emergency room as a doctor's office. And that's just one of the many, many ways that we could. So, you know, I'm not sure that I specifically answered that question except to say I do think that everyone has to have some responsibility.
Thank you, Congressman. Thank you, madam. We now have Nadine Ball in Tupelo, who has a question for the congressman about VA benefits and the health reform bill. You're on the line, Nadine.
Yes, I appreciate the opportunity to ask this question, and we did not have an option of voting for TRICARE or VA benefits in the vote a while ago. It wasn't one of the six. But I'm concerned about what will happen to VA benefits or to TRICARE for veterans and military retirees if 3200 or any other bill concerning health care winds up in use.
Thank you, Mr. Ball. And if you are receiving VA benefits, then obviously you should be concerned about this. H.R. 3200 did not change veterans' benefits. It basically left VA benefits as they are. As I've traveled around my district, our district, and I talk to people, the bulk of the veterans that I speak with personally tell me they are happy with their benefits. They're happy with their coverage. We, you know, one problem that we have with VA is, for instance, I heard you say you lived in Tupelo. In Tupelo, you either have to go to Memphis, Birmingham, or Jackson, Mississippi to a VA hospital. And I've been a supporter of VA clinics around this area that help people on measures not requiring surgery, et cetera, that they would have access to a VA clinic without having to drive long distances. In your case, from Tupelo to Memphis, it's about, I think, 80 or so miles. That's a long way to go. Again, this bill did not affect VA benefits. That wasn't one of the reasons that I am not supportive of it. I think that probably leaving it alone was the best option in this. So good call, and I appreciate your call.
Thank you, Congressman. We have a gentleman from Hernando on the phone, Mr. Hugh Provine, who has a question about insurance for members of Congress. Mr. Provine?
Yes,
sir.
If they could get the House of Representatives and the Senate to take the same insurance, I'd be willing to take the same insurance because they would definitely work out a good plan.
Well, let me say this, Mr. Provine. I hope I'm pronouncing your name correctly.
That's right.
If I voted for a bill, I would not vote for a bill that I would not agree to be a part of. For instance, right now in the federal insurance plan, I've always had insurance through my employer. When I was elected to Congress, the first week, an office manager / person sat down with me and showed me several options that the federal plan offers. And And let me say this, and you did not say this, but I would like to clear something up. I've gotten an email that circulates pretty often. I get it about once a month, that congressmen have this personal, private, or health insurance plan. Well, we don't. It's the same insurance plan that any other federal employee has, whether they work for the post office or Corps of Engineers or the National Park Service or any other federal employee. It's the same insurance. But I'll tell you what is good about it. By so many people being a part of it, the insurance providers have to be competitive. And I apologize that I don't remember exactly how many plans there were that I was able to look at, but for the sake of just comparison, I'm going to say that the first one started out with what I call the forward focus plan, the very small economy kind of a model, and then they stepped up, and they stepped up till ultimately they got to the Mercedes-Benz package. I personally, Mr. Provine, chose one pretty much in the middle. I chose a plan that didn't necessarily pay for every little thing and every little bottle of pills that I get and every time I had my teeth cleaned, but I did pick one that if, in fact, I am struck by a catastrophe, that it would not bankrupt me. So I picked one in the middle. I pay $356 a month for it. And, you know, so I'm not provided free insurance, and I've been asked that, you know, don't I get free insurance? I think it's a good insurance policy. I don't think I've ever used it, but I think it is a good policy. If I voted, but then, back to your question, if I voted for any health reform bill, I can assure you I would be willing to be a part of it if I vote for it. And I think you would think that was probably fair enough.
Thank you, Congressman. Thank you, sir. Congressman, we now have from Hernando Claire, who has a question about pre-existing conditions. Claire, you're on the phone.
I am, Congressman. I appreciate the time. My husband and I currently are both self-employed. I have a pre-existing condition from cancer 10 years ago, still cannot get health insurance. My question is, being in a higher tax bracket, is this going to be a program that would be made available to me as well as other people with pre-existing, or is it going to be based on income?
In other words, Claire, I think you're talking about, again, about $3,200, and then, again, or any other potential bill that is voted on. The answer to your question is yes, it would be made available to you. But, Claire, you make a perfect case for, you know, what I said earlier about insurance companies have to stop penalizing people who have a pre-existing illness or pre-existing disease. Here you have been, and I think I understood you correctly, that you had, like, it had been 10 years or something like that. I genuinely have compassion for you and for that situation. This is what we have to get away from, and this is where insurance companies have got to step up to the plate. This is also where those who do favor the public option would not preclude you. You would be offered insurance. I would like to see the private sector step up, offer you insurance, make you part of a bigger pool, and spread the risk. That's all in the world that the federal government plan does that covers me for $356 a month. It has so many people in it, it spreads the risk. And I heard you say, too, that you and your husband were self-employed and probably small business people. I don't think you said that, but I'm going to assume that you're probably small business people, which is the backbone of this country. So I appreciate you, and I'm sorry that you find yourself in this position without health insurance for 10 years. This is why, Claire, I say I want to vote for some health care reform bill. But, again, it must be fiscally responsible. It must be something we can afford. It must cut costs. It must address some of these issues that I'm just afraid are not being discussed enough, and one is pre-existing conditions.
Thank you, Claire, and thank you, Congressman. Congressman, we still have 2,145 people on the line with us. We've got 10 or 15 minutes more to go. The numbers say we've got 33 people in the queue wanting to ask questions and another 20 waiting to talk to your staff. Let me reassure everyone, if you don't get a chance to ask your question to the congressman, at the end of the call, you'll have an opportunity to leave a voicemail. The staff will get that voicemail and will respond. So please stay in the queue, but if you can't get to all your questions in the next few minutes, please don't think that they don't want to hear from you. Just stay after after the call. You'll have an opportunity to leave a voice message. Congressman, we have Ms. Edna Gibson from Golden who has a question about illegal aliens. Ms. Gibson, you're on the phone?
I am, but it's the husband, not the wife.
I beg your pardon. Excuse me, sir.
I appreciate your position statement, Congressman, at the beginning of the session. It's way too costly as it stands. We owe $1 trillion in indebtedness since January, and a 1,018-page bill is just too much to rush into. I especially appreciate you wanting to get it right and not move too fast. But I do have a concern about the coverage for illegal aliens. The House Ways and Means Committee defeated an amendment excluding illegals presented by Dean Haller of Nevada. And I wanted to get your stand, if you would give it to us, on where you stand on insuring illegal aliens.
Mr. Gibson, thank you. Thank you for that, and I appreciate your kind remarks earlier. But here's the situation. I represent 711,000 people in 24 counties in North Mississippi, and I'm keenly aware of that. I'm interested in covering or ensuring and making sure that these 711,000 people have access to health care. We need to be worried about taking care of our own before we're taking care of those that are here illegally. It's a terrible situation. It's not a simple solution about, you know, I've sat in meetings, I've visited with doctors, I've visited with hospital administrators, talking about how they handle these emergency room situations. I've also said this on illegal aliens. I understand why people want to be an American. I'm very proud to be an American. And if they want to move to America and become an American citizen, I welcome them, but they've got to follow the rules. Period. They've got to follow the rules. And then they will have access to the same government that you, Mr. Gibson, your wife, and me and my family have access to. But they've got to do it the right way. I'm not for insuring illegal aliens, period.
Thank you, sir. We have someone from the Van residence in South Haven who has a question about different insurance options and increasing rates. You're on the line. Now, please proceed.
Thank you. Yes, I have a question. It concerns my present Medicare drug plan. They have increased their monthly premium from $17.50, $26.50 to $44.50 in 3 years. Yet I'm still taking the same medicine as I was when I started, and my copay has also increased. Do you have any plans for these private insurance companies to have a cap on what they charge us to use their company?
Ms. Van, thank you again. A good question, and many people have asked me about this in a similar situation. When I began tonight, I mentioned, and I hope you were on board from the beginning of our call tonight, I mentioned that we need to do something to control cost, cut cost, if you will, increase competition. I really believe the second thing is the answer to your question. If the insurance companies want, for instance, participate in an exchange that you may have heard about, that in itself is going to make them competitive. Right now, there's nothing to really keep them from increasing your copay or your premiums at all. My statistic, and I stand by, that insurance premiums are increasing 7 times faster than wages in the state of Mississippi. If we don't get a handle on this, health care costs will soon consume every dime of your household income and my household income. And, again, complicated situation, a lot of questions, a lot of things to look at, but at least, you know, people are beginning to notice this and the fact that we have to do something. I do think increased competition, even if they're somewhat forced to do it, would answer that question and would cut down on the rising copay cost to you. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Congressman. We have Mr. George Petty from Pontotoc who has a question about Medicare Advantage. Mr. Petty, you're on the line now with the Congressman.
Yes. Mr. Childers, I understood you to say in answer to an earlier caller that the House Bill 3200 would not affect Medicare coverage. Does that include the Medicare Advantage plan, that's the fee-for-service plan that President Obama has indicated he wants eliminated? What is your stand on that?
Let me make sure. I'm not sure I followed the second part of what you said. Would you ask me that again?
I currently have a Medicare Advantage plan that's provided by United Health Corporation.
Okay.
And that's the program I understand. It's a fee-for-service plan that President Obama indicates is costing the government 17% more than other plans, and he wants it eliminated. My question is, what is your opinion on this?
Well, I differ with him on that it's costing 17% more. I differ with him on that, sir, and I am not prepared to say that I am for eliminating that. I have not seen any statistic, quite frankly, and while I don't proclaim to be an expert in this field on any of this, but I will tell you that I have read, studied a lot of it, in many aspects of it, as many as I have access to. I have not seen that statistic.
Thank you, Congressman. We have Jay Ingram from Saltillo who has a question about emergency room care and health care coverage. Mr. Ingram, you're on the line.
Thank you, Mr. Congressman. It baffles me that we have 80% of the people covered about, and the ones that aren't covered, they're not refused health care. They either go to the emergency room or they're given service through Medicaid. And it confuses me why we're going into this gigantic program when we have one that's somewhat working now, and all we need to do is fine-tune it. Thank you.
Thank you, sir, for your call. Again, if for the number one reason that I want to be a part of and I want to talk about and I want to be a part of healthcare reform is cost, I agree with you that I think probably somewhat close to 80% in our state and our region are covered either by private health insurance, Medicare or Medicaid or VA insurance. The problem with that is those who absolutely have no coverage, number one, I hope you heard earlier what I said about individual responsibility. They have to share some of that individual responsibility. We no longer have the luxury of treating people in an emergency room when really what they needed was a doctor visit. Because if you have private insurance, or really as far as that goes, Medicare and Medicaid, it's driving the cost up for all of us. We have to stop wasting money in this in our healthcare system. And let me say this at this point, if you'll allow me to. You know, we have a good healthcare system in America, and we do a lot of things right. We do many things right. The things that we're doing right, I don't want us to change those. You know, if we can improve those, that it would cut cost, if we could improve it to where we would improve quality of care, that's what we need to be looking at. The things that we're doing right, I'm a firm believer in the "if it ain't broke, don't fix it" statement, I guess. But so much of our healthcare system is just too costly. There's too much abuse. There's too much waste. And again, back to my very first sentence tonight, I think, or my first few minutes I talked, we've got to cut some of the cost. And there has to be individual responsibility here and to people. And we've got to stop using the emergency room. We just don't have that luxury anymore. But I appreciate your question.
Thank you, Congressman. We have about 4 minutes left, and unfortunately there's 35 people, 42 people who are waiting to ask questions. Let me remind folks that if the congressman doesn't get to your question or the screeners don't have a chance to write it down, you will still have at the end of the call, after the call's over, an opportunity to leave voicemail. Congressman, we've got about 3 minutes left, and I'm trying to summarize. I see about 8 people asking essentially the same question. That you talked a lot tonight about the details in House Bill 3200 about what's wrong with it, and you want to. They ask that you comment on the things in health care reform that you really want to see happen at the end of this legislative process, regardless of what kind of bill it's in. What are you for in terms of reform?
Many of you have heard, especially on the TV, probably for the last week or two, you've heard things like healthcare co-ops, healthcare exchange, mentioned as an alternative to the public option. I will tell you that I like the idea of a healthcare exchange where insurance companies basically come together through a central clearinghouse and offer their insurance, offer various plans, just like the insurance that, again, that I mentioned that I had, the federal plan. There was several policies. I had my choice of which one I wanted to buy. I could have bought an insurance policy for as little as something under, I think, $150, but it was very limited in what it covered. I'm not so sure that that's a bad idea. Co-ops, you've been hearing a lot about for the last couple of days. Co-ops are a relatively new idea, but co-ops are where different groups, employers, entities go together and offer insurance through a, quote, co-op. I think that has some merit. I will be the first to tell you I don't know all the details on a co-op, but I do think they have merit, nonprofit co-op, if you will. I am for cutting cost. I am for people taking personal responsibility for the part of their health that they can control. I think we should reward those who do take personal responsibility. I don't think we should choke small business to death with this. I want to go back to Claire, and I hope Claire's still on the line. When we're talking about that, for 10 years she hasn't had insurance. So many people, 60% of the bankruptcies today in America are because of a health care catastrophe. That's just not acceptable. You shouldn't bankrupt your family over health care. We need to make sure that these people have access to affordable insurance or affordable coverage. And the days of not insuring people because they have a pre-existing illness should be over. We should be beyond that. I do want to see the disparity of payments for rural doctors. I want to see that fixed and fixed correctly. Rural doctors should get paid the same for treating rural folks as urban doctors get for treating urban residents. I think, again, a very key issue that I want to support, if you are happy with the insurance that you have today or your coverage and being able to pick your doctor, I'm for that. And that's what I want to support. And H.R. 3200 is a long way from doing those things. I want my constituents to know that I'm monitoring every bill that is out there. I want to be a part of the solution. I don't want to be a part of the problem. I do not think this bill has sufficient support to pass. I'm anxiously awaiting to see what else comes out. I also, and I guess lastly, I want to say I just can't support a health care bill that adds another $1 trillion or so to the debt. This has to be deficit neutral. So having said all that, I think I'm kind of close to my end of time, and I, to those of you who were kind enough to take an hour, and we had thousands of people. And sir, how many do we have now still with us? 7,000? 230? Oh, I'm sorry. We still have 2,300 people on the line. 7,230 people have called in and spent some time with us tonight. And if we didn't get to your question, please stay on the line. Ask your question. We will answer your question by email or letter or however form you want to. Again, health care reform, I think, could be the most important issue that I ever vote on in Congress, whether I stay one term or 10 terms. I've said before, and I want to stress to you again, I think it's far more important that we get health care reform right than getting it fast. I understand the controversial nature of it. I understand that we're all not going to agree, but I think we all do agree, even if we have insurance that we're happy with, I don't think you're happy with the fact that your health insurance premiums are rising seven times faster than wages. I want to be a part of helping fix that problem and be a part of the solution. And again, I thank you so much for taking an hour out of your life tonight to be with us. And again, if we didn't answer your question, please stay on the line, ask a question, and we will get back to you. Thank you again. Good night.